Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 1st, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, blogger, and all-around good guy, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
And we're happy to be joined by author and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Well, guys, and everyone listening, I have a feeling you know what we're going to talk about. Over the course of this past week, a human catastrophe has been visited upon eastern part of Texas, Houston in particular, right? Mariah, tell me, in Houston this past week, what's the first thing we should be thinking about?
There was a little bit of water.
And what did that water do to the people in Houston?
Yeah, it's been with all of the flooding and the storms dumping rain. I mean, this is something that's never, ever been seen before. I think I heard that Houston got more rain in 2 days than it has gotten in a year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's mm-hmm. exactly right,
something
but
like
something
that,
along those lines. Yeah. Just dumped with rain.
And I think that what we've seen is, you can debate the decision-making process of whether people should have been evacuated or not. But the long and short of it is that the people in the city of Houston have been, their lives have been upset, at the very least, right? People are out of their homes, they're in shelters, they have no food, don't have their medications. I mean, just a significant disruption for many people in the Houston area. So I guess we should begin our discussion of Harvey and what's going on with a message of support, condolence, and we've got your back kind of message for all the people who live in the Houston area. As Americans, we all pull together, and this is a time when we will need to pull together, because Houston is has got a long and somewhat hazardous road ahead of us. One of the things that I will do is put up on the blog, or between Mariah and I, we'll put up a blog somewhere, but there are a list of places you can send money to support the goings on. The one I found had a list of a bunch of local places like food banks in Houston that could probably benefit from your donations, and I think that's important to do. Mariah, I think you had a different one.
NextGen America will, first of all, match your donation, which is really nice, and also NextGen America is just a great organization. It's Tom Steyer's organization. He's a businessman and a philanthropist, but the organization is designed to act politically to prevent climate disaster, promote prosperity, and protect the fundamental rights of every American. So it's a really good all-around organization, and they have a Hurricane Harvey Community Relief Fund, and again, they will match the donation, so we could definitely put a link up to that organization.
I think it's important to recognize the human scale of the suffering in Houston. But it's my feeling that at the same time, we need to be speaking frankly about the underlying causes of this storm and the implications of what's happening. My gut says it's not too early to get to that kind of discussion, because we have in front of us unfolding what is a climate event, and that we need to make that point in real time. There are various, I don't know, DR, if you saw, there was an article by a guy named Eric Holthaus, I think, who was saying something about how this is what climate change looks like, in real time. Is that the gist of his, I think it was on Politico, right?
Yes, Politico.com ran that piece by Eric Holthaus of Slate, basically making the point that this is the sort of extreme weather event that climate scientists have been warning about for decades, and the destructive nature of it is what climate scientists have also been warning about for decades. It's interesting that around the same time that this was published, in fact, I believe one day afterwards, David Leonhardt of the New York Times also discussed, had a piece with a very similar theme titled Harvey, the Storm That Humans Helped Cause, in which he explained the physics of why this happened, you know, warmer weather causing heavier rainfall, mm-hmm. and because the oceans are warmer as a result of ocean acidification traced to carbon pollution, therefore we have this deluge. And I think it is a profound moral tragedy that both Politico and the New York Times are two publications that ran these great reports, but also have had a history of running denialist screeds. In fact, earlier this year, the New York Times gave us Brit Stevens, who pretends that this sort of stuff is not real, when it is very, very real and profoundly deadly.
Well, I think that one of the things we need to be clear on at the beginning is, it's not, I don't want it to be geeky, but I want people to understand what the connections of this storm to climate were, right? Now, Mariah, are you in a position to give us some of, because the talking points hang in your head, right? This specific little fact, you know, matters for what happened. So tell me, Mariah, what's the background on this whole thing?
Right. So, you know, you remember how we were talking last week about how science predicted the eclipse down to the minute?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that science can predict a thing or two about storms. So, you know, Michael Mann wrote an article for The Guardian that said that sea level is more than a half a foot higher in the past few decades, which means the storm surge is also a half a foot higher than it would have been a few decades ago. And as well, the sea surface temperatures have risen about a half a degree Celsius or 1 degree Fahrenheit over the past few decades. And Mann goes on to talk about this, you know, scientific equation, the Clapeyron.
That's the same one I talked about when Tom Brady deflated his football, but put that aside.
So that equation tells us that for each 0.5 degree Celsius rise in ocean temperatures, we'll have a roughly 3% increase in average atmospheric moisture. So specifically for Harvey, sea surface temperatures were about 0.5 to 1 degree Celsius warmer, which translates to about 3 to 5% more moisture in the atmosphere. And, you know, so in my book, Protecting the Planet, get a little plug for that, which... September 13th, you could come see me talk a little bit more about it, but at Trident. But in Protecting the Planet, my father and I put this together really well. We essentially said that warm air holds more water vapor than cold air, to kind of get the background in this science. And so as you have warming oceans, it causes more water to evaporate into the atmosphere. So the amount of water condensed in the clouds and our skies is constantly increasing as the Earth warms. And then the conditions that make a storm, or when a front of cold, dry air collides with a front of warm, wet air. When this happens, the clouds are basically like a gigantic sponge being squeezed. So with that 3 to 5% more moisture in the clouds, 3 to 5% more moisture was there to be squeezed out. Mm-hmm. So the storm, you know, that hurricane may have happened anyway. Sure, if there was no climate change happening, of course the storm would happen. I mean, that's sort of ill, you know, to say, oh, well, you know, climate change didn't cause a storm. Well, no, it didn't cause a storm, but it's a storm exacerbator. It's a storm accelerator. Mm-hmm. Climate change gives an assist to these storms. So instead of, you know, just the moisture you have this additional moisture that dumps, and you have additionally high sea level to warm more of the air and put more moisture into the clouds. So it's a climate change assist, makes these storms significantly worse, and it's just going to keep increasing as the ocean gets warmer and the climate gets warmer. It's just going to get more and more water in the clouds.
And to the same point you're making, I saw an article in The Atlantic, and basically they were making the argument that the warmer ocean water, right, which is, you know, the hot water in the Western Gulf, is much warmer than normal. This storm comes over, it feeds off that power, and that what's worse is that when the water gets churned up, the deeper water in the Gulf that gets brought to the surface is also warm. and that this storm went from a tropical storm on Thursday to a Category 4 on Friday or something, you know, very quickly as it approached the coast, because there was so much warm water feeding moisture up into the storm. And that was another reason this was a climate event, as you said, a climate-assisted event. And I think it was even Michael Mayer saying that the other thing is that with climate change, you get these, the jet stream dips low and you get these stalled weather fronts, right? And so now the storm comes ashore and it just sits there, sucking water out of the ocean and dumping it onto Houston for days and days because climate change has prevented the sort of natural flow that would carry the thing away. So I mean, completely agree that there is some very specific technical reasons that say Harvey was made worse. And Mariah used this great phrase, right? A climate-assisted catastrophe, right? I mean, the climate change made this thing worse, and that's all there is to it, right?
And yeah, I mean, in any news organization that tries to say differently, or let me say that again, any EPA organization that tries to say that it's not exacerbated by climate is just flat out ignoring the facts.
This
is unquestionable, and it's actually made me really upset that a lot of news organizations have been saying, well, this storm was not caused by climate change, because that's, you're omitting some serious facts when you say it that way.
And I completely agree, DR. I one question is whether or not, not to go off and beat up on the fake media one more time, but it's like, it's my gut is that I have not been happy with the way the media in general have downplayed the climate aspect of this and keep saying how unprecedented and amazing the storm is, right? That's the classic thing. Right? Maybe it sells more airtime, right, DR?
Well, it's linked to something that in that David Leonhardt piece, James Hansen refers to as scientific reticence, by which Hansen means climate scientists being reluctant to say that any one storm was exacerbated by climate change. Anything, and obviously Hansen by implication is saying that that reticence on the part of climate scientists ends up being reflected in the mainstream media. Now, Michael Mann had a line for several years, and he wasn't the only one who used this, that basically compared climate change to a baseball player on steroids, that if a baseball player has more home runs and he's on steroids, you can't necessarily prove that any single home run mm-hmm. was directly caused by the steroids, but him being on steroids helped the likelihood that he would hit home runs artificially. So from this perspective, to make the comparison more real, you can say that carbon pollution is, quite frankly, a human growth hormone for storms. and to the extent that this scientific reticence exists in the climate science community, it needs to stop now, when climate scientists need to lose whatever fear they may have of directly saying what Kevin Trenberth previously said, that all storms are impacted by climate change, by virtue of the fact that we've changed the climate.
But I would take issue with that. I don't want to blame climate scientists for trying to be prudent in what they say. It seems to me that there is plenty of evidence and concrete, useful information that the news media steps over when they want to talk about how much it's raining. Right? It's much more. I was just mesmerized half an hour ago watching little kids get helicoptered up in baskets, you know, pulled up into baskets into helicopters hovering over their homes. I mean, that's mm-hmm. compelling, right? But the discussion that says that this is something that is consistent with, I mean, the biggest story of the century, and I just feel like they walked past it. Anyway, let's put the fake media. I guess the other place to go look, a very interesting article is from Dave Roberts in Vox. So we get three articles I recommend you read. One is by Michael Mann. It was in The Guardian. One is, I'm not sure the guy's name, is in The Atlantic this past week. And then there's one by David Roberts at Vox, where he talks about, basically makes the same case, right? That climate change did not cause Hurricane Harvey, but it's a big part of the story, right? And so, dear listener, you should make the connection. You're not going to hear it anywhere, almost anywhere, but here on the Climate Minute, right? Harvey is a climate-assisted storm. It was made much worse. I mean, the unbelievable apocalyptic weather report. What did it say? Unprecedented rain for, you know, any number of days. I forget what that the weather report from the National Weather Service. I mean, that is connected to climate, and this thing was made worse. All right. Are we all agreed?
No
take
question.
A vote?
No question.
Yeah. All agree say
I'm
aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'll put money on it.
Okay. So we got that part. So let's talk. Yeah. Go ahead, Mariah.
Well, I was just going to say about something. You know, I think the heart, this is the other thing that's really apparent in this. Anytime you have one of these sort of enormous climate, nature, natural disasters, is you see inordinately affected are the poor, the sick, and the elderly. That's really who gets slammed in these. Because, you know, if you have money, you can evacuate early and go stay at a hotel for 3 weeks and, you know, all of these different things. But if you don't have a car and you rely on public transportation, or if you're in a hospital and the hospital starts getting flooded, I mean, or, you know, their generators don't work for whatever. I mean, these things, that's who ends up getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had mentioned this, Ted, but the Pod Save America said that, you know, we're very good as humans, I guess. We're very good at acute compassion, but climate change requires long-term decency. And, you know, I think you kind of see that playing out here. Like, it's been a lot of resources are going in and helping people. And, you know, there's been some really wonderful stories coming out of Houston for people coming together and neighbors helping neighbors and people coming in from everywhere with their boats to help rescue people. But we have a long-term decency that we have to uphold, which is to make sure that this doesn't happen again and again and again to people in the future, because it's always the poor, the sick, and the elderly that get the most affected. And that's where it's important to recognize this as a climate change-assisted disaster, right, and to really understand and talk about and make motions toward climate amelioration.
I agree completely. And I think that two of the things that popped up here is that there were initially reports that the immigration ICE, immigration and
Customs Enforcement,
right? They were going to keep, they were going to maintain the border checkpoints or something, so that people, say undocumented people, would then still have, that were trying to escape the rain, would still be apprehended. And there, I guess the mayor of Houston has said, you should go to a shelter whether you're documented or undocumented. But the point being, not that Trump's ICE administration is particularly heinous, which it is, but to Mariah's point, that when these things happen, the poor get hit the hardest, right? And you can see the handwriting on the wall that this is the kind of thing that's going to happen. This authoritarian kind of stuff becomes more and more likely as the society gets more and more stressed. I mean, the other point I was going to make on the same topic is there was a thing in The Intercept. Bill McKibben tweeted about it, but it was basically talking about environmental justice and racism. I think it was by Exxon, and it might have been in Houston, but, you know, these refineries that are all being shut down in Port Arthur and whatnot are surrounded by disadvantaged communities, and they're the ones that have been getting hit for the last 30 years, right? But certainly now, their backyard, like, you hear these reports about this unbearable petrochemical smell coming out of,
yes.
Right? I mean, who's getting that, right? It's the people who live near the refineries. And it's just, it's again, to your point, Mariah, the common decency, the long-term decency that has to parallel the acute compassion, the long-term decency to make sure this kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore needs to be called out and explicitly recognized, right? I mean, DR, what do you got? You've been silent for a while.
I would absolutely agree. And Naomi Klein, who I think wrote that piece in The Intercept, she was also interviewed about it on Democracy Now! Recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she just discussed the fact that this is the time when people need to discuss the multiple threats that the fossil fuel industry posed to humanity, not only in terms of, you know, the carbon pollution, but also the petrochemicals being placed near disadvantaged communities, the fact that those disadvantaged communities will be suffering for decades to come from the increased cancers, from the increased gastrointestinal diseases that will be brought about as a result of all these chemicals now flowing through Houston. It is not just the great, you know, climate change is not just the great exacerbator of extreme weather, it's also the great exacerbator of extreme, you know, disparities in terms of income disparities, cultural disparities and what have you. And, you know, just as we saw after Katrina, some of the things, you know, all the stories about the gentrification that occurred in New Orleans after Katrina, I fully expect that to happen in Houston as well.
Well,
as the rebuilding occurs.
Interesting point. We need to wrap this show up, but one of Naomi Klein's books was called The Shock Doctrine, right? Mm-hmm. And basically that people with money and the time to do planning, which typically represent guys like the Koch brothers, have a plan. So when a disaster happens, they're going to come in and they're going to, you know, let's cut the minimum wage, let's, you know, do all these things. I think it's time for the people like us to start talking about our own shock doctrine and say, okay, Houston is flattened, right? Mm-hmm. It should come back as a sustainable city, a model sustainable city with, you know, powered with green energy. And here's how we do it right this time, just as a pushback against the kind of thing that. So this is another show.
Woo-hoo, woo-hoo.
So let's just review, okay? So we're in the midst of a catastrophe happening in Houston, right? It is a somber time, right? There's human suffering, but there's also the intellectual recognition that this is not an act of God, right? So we're here to try and start to draw the wagons, circle the wagons here to talk about that this is a climate event, this is something that requires thought, and that we see that Harvey is climate assisted, phrase of the day, and the environmental justice factors that are playing into it. And that's just the beginning, right? There's going to be years of discussion of this, just as there's years of discussion of Katrina and Sandy. Let's hope we can make this one into a constructive event. Wow. Anyway, so we're going to continue this discussion in the next show. Anything else you guys want to do to close out this show with what we just talked about here?
Just to throw in there that Naomi Klein's other book, No Is Not Enough, is also a really interesting read about how to move forward in a better way.
And Dia, you read the other one. What was the other one?
This changes everything, right?
There you go. Okay.
And I would say to have a positive shock doctrine, that's going to require an amassing of political will, the likes of which we have not seen in recent years, but hopefully we'll see in the aftermath of this.
All right. So look, what we'll do is we'll put up links to this stuff. There's, dear listener, as you can imagine, there's tons and tons of stuff to read. You can drown in it literally. But we'll put up links to get you going at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. Check it out. You can find this. You can send your friends, since you're already listening to this podcast, you can send your friends to the Mass Climate Action Facebook page /Mass Climate Action so they can listen to it as well. You can keep up with current MCAN events by being a friend of of that page. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and other directories. And of course, you can find us on the mother of all podcast directories, iTunes. And you just search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Stay dry, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.